Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guests are poet Joyce Holmes McAllister and publisher Mary Beth O'Connor. McAllister was born when her parents lived on a dairy farm just outside of Ithaca, New York. She is a graduate of Ithaca College, where she majored in theater. In the 1950s, she and her first husband lived in New York City, where she worked for the Social Sciences Research Council. McAllister has been writing poetry throughout her life and is the author of two poetry collections, Before We Knew, published by Foothills Publishing, and her most recent, called Return, published by Yellow Sofa Press in 2017. And Mary Beth O'Connor will be reading for Joyce today. O'Connor is a poet and retired professor of writing at Ithaca College and the founder and publisher of Yellow Sofa Press. And welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this new collection, Return, covers your earlier years in New York City with your first husband. And you describe the poems as sharply detailed and vibrant. To tell us a little bit about this.
As far as the poems are concerned, and as far as I'm concerned, that era in New York still is as vibrant as it ever was. And I think that's one reason I was able to write the poetry. It never left me. So I traveled through that city in many ways, the way I traveled there when I lived there. And the images and the places were part of my life still.
Wow, that's it. How long did it take you?
Well, I was probably 2 months, 3 months.
Wow. You must have been stuck in the past for that whole time.
I was. There were details that came through to me that I would have said I'd forgotten if I'd known to say that. But they became so sharp and so real that it just kind of flowed.
Wow, that amazing. I was going to say it took you a year. Well, since it's a collection is about memory and experience, was it difficult to go back and in some ways to relive all these moments? And
there was the difficult part, in a sense, when my first husband was ill during the time we were in New York. And that part of it was difficult. But on the other hand, it was a wonderful way of being able to express probably a sadness that I had felt about that whole era for the rest of my, since the time I'd lived there.
Yeah, yeah. So was it actually good for you to write about it? It was like cathartic?
I beg your pardon?
Was it cathartic?
Yes, I would say so, definitely.
And yeah, I would think it would be difficult to go back to some of those early days. It was so long ago. Was that hard for you? Did you sometimes say, no, I'm not going there?
No, I didn't. It was really something I wanted to express about an era of my life that not many people knew about.
Yeah.
And it was, as you said, it was cathartic.
Yeah.
It really was.
Oh, that's great.
And I loved the way it came to me. I was kind of amazed myself, to be honest with you. Yeah. I'd never forgotten those years in New York.
Yeah, vivid.
And every time I went back after that, it was like going home. Yeah. So that's the way I felt.
Oh, that's great. Oh, it's so nice to be able to, circle around and capture some of those moments. Well, did you discover anything in your past that was buried and suddenly poetry brought it out and you were surprised?
I think I was a little, although it happened very easily, I think I was very surprised, in a sense, at how vivid and how much I remembered. For instance, the place we lived, the coffee shops, the building I worked in, all of those things remained, very sharp, very sharp.
Wow.
And I think that made the images come more easily because it was as though almost it was happening right then.
Oh, God, that's magnificent. What a way to write a poem. Mary Beth, I want you to read Strap Hangers and tell us a little bit about it, Joyce, before she starts.
Well, for those who have lived in New York City, you've been on the subway, I think you'll recognize what's going on. But I remember in the very beginning, when I was in New York, I rode the Staten Island Ferry over to where you picked up the subway to go uptown to the Grand Central. Mm-hmm. And to get on the subway in the morning downtown and go up to Grand Central was a major operation. And you learned how to fight. You learned how to push, and you learned how to shove. And for somebody who had never been in that atmosphere before, it was a real experience. But I became pretty good at it.
Mary Beth, would you like to read it, please?
Strap hangers. Sometimes we went underground into man-made semi-light, inhabited by rushing life, and waited for the sightless monster. It came, plunging toward us with a roar, one huge eye filled with blinding brightness, revealing darkened corners, squinting faces, moving forms. The monster pushed through waves of heated air, engulfing us with dissonance. Surrounded now, we braved it out. Wheels slowed, squealed in pain, locked against the aging rails, then stopped with one last groan. We knew the monster rattled buildings at their roots, made sidewalks shake, and ran for miles beneath dark, churning river water. Engrossed, we lost ourselves amid the fight for space. Doors opened. Pounds of flesh surrounded us, pinned us in. We heaved with it, part of a living mass, fighting for a spot within. We willed the closing door to open, grabbed a strap. Your body lurched with mine against the moving force. We braced our legs, hung on. I read the poster above your head. Pall Mall, so round, so firm, so fully packed.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's wonderful. God, that really does invoke the, you know, my memories of subways and some of the trams in Europe. Wow, that very descriptive. Now, most of these poems are from the distant past. So did you use any little tricks on how to, you know, get yourself sparked to start writing about this period?
I didn't have to. I think down underneath, it was something I had wanted to write about for years. And at the time I started writing this, I'd been away from New York, as far as living in New York, for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But it was still so vivid inside me, and I still cared so much about the city and what had happened there that it just came to me.
Wow. You know, a lot of poets and people in general would be afraid to go back to these times. Did you ever have any hesitancy and, you know, ask yourself, am I recollecting this correctly? Or to be honest, you know, you probably wanted to be honest about it.
That I didn't question what I wrote about, what I did write about. What I didn't do was talk about some of the more, or write about some of the more difficult times of my husband's illness, mm-hmm. and some of the really very sad times that happened, and things that I think inside I was probably still mourning about. Mm-hmm. Those I didn't go deeply into. I could have, but it felt to me as though it spoiled the feel of where the poetry was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mary Beth, I want you to read Norma Cook's Dinner for the Girls and tell us a bit about it, Joyce.
Well, I worked at the Social Science Research Council, and there were a group of us, about four girls. And one night, Norma, which was her real name, invited us to her place for dinner on the Lower East Side, and it was in a tenement building. Mm. I had never been in a tenement building before, and it was a wonderful evening. I learned, as I always did when I was in New York, but Norma cooked a pasta with white clam sauce, and it was loaded with garlic. And after dinner, we went to the theater, And we began to realize that everybody around us was moving away. And it finally occurred to some of us that it was the garlic. We were, you know, reeking in garlic. But it was a wonderful evening. And I really meant, in the poem, I talk about the walls. Mm-hmm. And I thought about how ancient they were and how much those walls had heard. And what the conversations were like, including our own. Hmm. So that's kind of where that poem came from.
Mary Beth, would you like to read it, please?
Norma cooks dinner for the girls. The tenement is old, a century of dust between the walls and ageless souls who travel through the halls in search of silenced sound. Young female faces hover over capellini, fine and firm, topped with white clam sauce, afire with garlic and sweetness from the sea. One wipes a dripping chin. They spin away the hours, drink wine, make light with words across the table, play music, sing, toss lucky coins into the air. Their hours catch between old walls, burn in candlelight, get trapped in chipped blue pasta bowls, now quickly turning cold. Time will leave them there, still babbling with joy, held captive in their prime.
Wow. You know what I want to ask you, Jordan? That poem especially made me have this question. Are many of the people you write about still in your life, or did they remain in your life for years? How was that?
They, for years, I went back to New York and visited people that I worked with in particular. Norma, who's the subject of, or is in the poem that was just read by Mary Beth, went to Paris on one of her vacations. It was in the day when you still took a boat to Europe.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't have much money, so she went in steerage. And she met this young French man, and she came back and she told us she'd met the man she was going to marry. And we all told her she was crazy. And she told us she was going to go back again the next summer, and she did. And she became engaged, and they got married, and the last I knew, they had three boys.
Wow. So you're still in touch with a lot of people from the poetry. That amazes me. Wow. So many people want poetry in their lives and past to be shimmering and perfect, you know. You seem to approach it in a different way. You know, you talk about the darkness and the loss. I was just wondering, was that a conscious decision to talk about some of the negative stuff?
You know, I think I wrote as it came to me and as I felt about it. So when some of the dark things creep in, that's because I felt it was okay at that moment. But I just kind of went with the flow, I think, as to how I was feeling.
Yeah,
inside.
You said in the beginning that there were a lot of things you didn't write about because they were too painful.
That's correct.
So the stuff that's still painful, I mean, reading it is still painful. You were able to decipher which, you know, angle you wanted to pursue, huh?
Well, there was enough that that was really, would have been very unpleasant to have put in the book. It would have been very painful. And for me, and it would have been painful for the memories that I was trying to express. So I consciously left those things out. But for the most part, I tried to intimate that there was more to it than just always joy and always the city and always, I think there are undertones of a tragic kind of ending.
If you're just joining us, my guest is poet Joyce Holmes McAllister and publisher Mary Beth O'Connor. We're talking about Joyce's book, Return, about her life in New York City in the 1950s. And I want to have Mary Beth read Before We Knew. Go ahead and tell us a bit about it, Joyce.
Well, this is really ironic to me. In the poem, I talk about us walking across town, east to west, and that is exactly right. And we used to go to this restaurant called the Brittany, and it was a little French restaurant, and obviously not expensive. And as I was writing that poem, I kept saying to myself, was the name of that restaurant really the Brittany? But it seemed right, so I used it. I have found out since I have met two different people, elderly, like I am, who went to the Brittany when it was a real restaurant in New York, and it was on the West Side, and it was the same restaurant. Wow. So my memory was correct.
That's great. Mary Beth, can you read Before We Knew, please?
Before We Knew. Tonight, I saw us together in that tiny restaurant, French, cheap, good, someplace on the West Side. Was it called the Brittany? Coke au vin, crusty bread, the old waitress, her wrinkled face, burnt red hair, knowing eye looking down at us like children seated for a tea party, waiting for a grown-up nibble of the real world. Her name has spun away, sucked into time, evaporated like those years. We would walk across town, east to west, you wearing your only suit, blue and thinning in the seat, but pressed and clean, like fresh, crisp air. And me beside you, high heels hitting gray concrete, staccato rhythm, beating sharp and sure for blocks and blocks. We talked, our voices floating over pavement, moving forward toward the Hudson's rolling river water. And we held hands, unless your words were large, profound, untouchable, too daring for constraint, too heavy to be held. And I would listen silently, reaching for your meaning, hungry for the food. Then escargot, pungent garlic fumes, a glass of red. We ate, talked, pondered us again. It was like that, years ago, in that little place, back in timeless space. Before we ever knew, for us, there was no way forward.
Wow, that is such a touching poem, Joyce. I can see you in that restaurant. I can see you walking the streets of New York. You know, a lot of people take photographs and talk about New York as kind of a lonely place. And I could see you there. Did it come back to you that way?
Yes. And I will tell you this. Recently, there was a small reading of Return in an apartment in New York at the Coppolas. And they were the aunt and uncle of Francis Lloyd Coppola. And she wanted to read Before We Knew because, again, as I said earlier, they had actually eaten there when they were first married and felt the same kind of empathy to the place that I had and John had.
Wow. And then you placed yourself in that moment so beautifully. Right. I was really impressed. Well, what time frame did you use to write these? I know you said you wrote them all in one piece, but how long did it take you, and when did you write them?
I was in a poetry group several years ago, and I wrote a few of them there, and then I kept going back to them, and then I revised them, which is, I think, any poet knows half of writing poetry is revising it. Mm-hmm. And I finally got to where I wanted to be. And actually, I talked to Mary Beth, and she said, yes, I think you are where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about publishing it.
Wow. Well, so it came together pretty easily, it sounds like. You know, so many famous poets like Sylvia Plath and Anne Sexton love to spill their guts, pour out their angers and their fears. You say that you hesitated writing about certain things. Is that because you didn't want to do that or were incapable of doing it? Tell us.
Well, my first husband had a violent suicide attempt in New York, and there were some aspects of that and his hospitalization and things that I felt it changed the tone of the collection. Mm. It, it isn't that I didn't want to talk about it. I thought it changed the flavor of it, the kind of imagery that I wanted people to remember from the collection.
Mm-hmm.
I did write a couple of poems that included those moments and decided to leave them out because they just changed the feel of the book.
Wow. Do you think you'll ever publish them in the future? The downer poems
they might
or something?
Be in some separate, you know, maybe published separately in a, not as a collection or anything, but as a poem that's, you know, put in another magazine or mm-hmm. whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't think I'll ever write all of the detail about that mm-hmm. part of it.
Yeah, I certainly understand that. Mary Beth, I want you to read Epilogue, New York City, 2012. Joyce, tell us a bit about it.
You know, I never failed many times to watch the ball come down on New Year's Eve because it was still meaningful to me. It made me feel as though I was in New York. And so this poem is envisioning a time when I am searching to see if we're still there, or aren't we? Mm-hmm. Or were we ever there? Did we ever go and watch the ball come down in Times Square on New Year's Eve? And it's a real, again, remembrance, even though this didn't happen in particular, the imagery of sitting in the chair and watching the people and the ball come down is real and very real for me.
Mary Beth, please read it.
Epilogue, New Year's Eve, 2012. Faces look skyward, their images caught on television cameras. I shift in my easy chair, pretend to join the frigid scene, feel my cheeks grow cold. No, a warm scarf hugs my neck, covers a frigid chin. My hands are gloved, curled deep inside coat pockets. A camera brings the crystal sphere into view. Frozen in space, it shimmers against the city's night sky. Then, on cue, slowly starts to fall. All watch the descent, chant each second, roar impatiently, then suddenly, the new year. I sip a brandy, try to remember, were we ever there on New Year's Eve? I lean closer, search the shifting crowd. Tonight, the city lives again in me, sharp, clear. It stings a bit, like any worthwhile memory. I long to search the screen, find your face, and then find mine, alive inside that city one more time.
Well, that's a beautiful poem. And, you know, I wanted to have this be the last poem in the interview, and it was the last poem in your book. I'm sure that was deliberate.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. And you planned it that way?
Yes. I mean, this poem was one of the last I wrote. In fact, I think it was the last that I wrote. And it's from real experience of mm-hmm. sitting there and still remembering.
Mm-hmm. When you were sitting there remembering, doing probably writing this whole book, did it make you sad or did it make you happy? Did it make you have regrets that you weren't still living that life? How did you feel?
I felt sad about some of the things that happened there. I have never regretted living in New York.
Mm.
I loved it. I still do. I don't know that I'd want to live there today, but because I'm just too old. But I loved the city. I loved going back there after I left the city. I didn't want to leave the city. When I did, I would have continued to live there.
Mm.
But I really had to leave because of my husband's illness and getting help for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's still a very vivid part of my life.
Did writing this book help you sort of close that chapter in your life? Was it cathartic?
I think it did.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I kind of relived the whole era. And that was, I think it was important for me to do because it had still remained a very difficult, in one sense, a very difficult time because of what happened to John. And it was a way of me expressing that and even talking about it with other people, which I had not done a lot of over the years.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll continue writing poems about New York?
About what?
About New York.
Oh, I might write about New York any time, but it probably won't be about this era of New York, you know, my era living then as a young woman and my experiences then, mm-hmm. which, in a way, I wish there were another time period.
The next lifetime, right?
In the next lifetime. I'm coming back, yes.
Yeah. Have you shown these poems to anybody who were your peers or people you're still in touch with who were in New York during that era?
Well, I have. I can tell you people I'm in touch with now, very closely in touch with, but they didn't live there then because they weren't born then. My surrogate grandson is an actor, a working actor who lives in New York, and his partner. And I'm very, very close to him. And actually, he and his parents moved in next door to us when he was 2. And he loved theater from the time he was a little kid. And so I grew up with him in my life, and he decided to go into theater. And after he graduated, he went to New York. Mm. So he lives there. The people I worked with in New York, sadly, of course, were older even than I am, and so they're dead. They're no longer there. But I know a new group of people that are part of Jeremy's life. That's his name, my surrogate grandson. So that's wonderful, you know.
Yeah, the story continues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are almost out of time. Joyce Holmes McAllister and Mary Beth O'Connor, thank you much for joining us. Now, Joyce, do you have any contact information you'd like to give, or a website or email, and for so people can get in touch?
Well, the book itself is available locally. It's also available on Amazon. I can give you my email address in case anyone...
If you're comfortable, sure.
That's okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's Joyce H. McAllister at gmail.com. Very simple.
Well, great. Thank you so much for joining us again. Joyce Holmes McAllister's book is called Return. Go out and get it. It's a beautiful collection. Thank you.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.